Okay, welcome everybody to Saturday afternoon meditation class at the Dhammaloka Centre, the Buddhist Society of Western Australia. And this is the class where we give about 15 minutes of teaching about meditation. And that is followed by a guided meditation, or rather the first half is guided, and then the second half, when people get into a certain degree of peacefulness, let them take that peacefulness further. There comes a time in meditation when the momentum of peace just takes over and you don't need to do anything. And sometimes you don't even need the instructions from somebody else like me. It's a time for you to just observe and just literally be with what's happening and just see how much you can let go. Let go of what? It's let go of this tendency to control, all coming from wanting something, doing things. It's learning how to totally vanish. The sense of me guiding this process. No more driver, just watching, observing. And every Saturday I try to teach something more about this path of meditation. And I just love to teach about some of the deeper stuff of meditation, especially the nimittas which come up, these beautiful lights which come up in the mind. And if one does it correctly, these nimittas, it's a Pali word, they come up at a time when we are just being with a delightful breath. It's the usual way. So in the breath meditation, you're just watching your breathing, after calming the mind down first of all, and the breath becomes so delightful. You may notice the way I teach the meditation is obviously focusing a lot on the pleasurable side of meditation, the delight, the beauty which one feels in the body and the mind. As I mentioned last night, those who listened to my talk last night, that when one is even just walking slowly, as I did up that hill, underneath Kingsbury Drive in Bodhinyana Monastery. Just walking up that hill one day, I was just so peaceful and walked so slowly that what I saw on that hillside was gorgeous. This is what happens when one develops a peaceful mind. One goes slowly in life. What one sees is more beautiful than one expects. All that is the mind is being able to perceive delight in things, in obviously natural things, not delight in excitement and stuff, but delight in peace, a delight which just stays there and is very, very satisfying. And so this is what happens when one starts developing the delight in the breath. You're just sitting there, the body's so relaxed it's just about disappeared, you can't really feel very much, in a reasonably quiet place with hardly any disturbances, and you're just watching your breath go in, go out, it's not forced. And because you don't need much oxygen, because you're not doing very much, it's a car which is just on, just not even low gear, just parked, on idling, I think they say. And when there's no energy being used, you don't need so much oxygen. So the breath gets very relaxed. Very peaceful. You're not concerned where it comes into your body or where it goes out, and you're not controlling it. You get to this point, which I've often mentioned, where your breath is like a friend, a very close friend. You don't control friends. You enjoy each other's company. You don't need even to say anything towards one another. You know each other so well. You just sit next to one another, or go for a walk next to one another, just understanding that the silence of friendship is a sign there is nothing to change. So anyway, as one just watches your breath go in and go out, just naturally, and I keep mentioning this word naturally, it's not something which you do, it's something which happens when you're not doing things. Is the breath becomes really peaceful and becomes very smooth, becomes very aware and very delightful. when I started talking and teaching about this, I used to call it the beautiful breath. These days I call it delightful breath, which is a better use of the English language. It's delightful watching this breath. And it's satisfying, which means you don't need to go anywhere. The mind doesn't wander off when you're with something which is very happy and delightful. It just stays there. And because you're not moving, because you're not going anywhere, because you're not wanting anything, you're just really content just watching this delightful breath, the delight grows. It becomes, with every in-breath, with every out-breath, becomes more delightful. And this is not a stage of meditation which you aim for. It's not something which you do and struggle with and trying to aspire towards. Every time that you get involved, even with noble aspirations, you mess up the peacefulness. So you just let it happen. Let it be. Let go of control and wanting. And just let whatever's left just be. With this wonderful sense of kindness and care. With a gentle, compassionate mind, which sees just so much delight in this moment. For those of you who know the usual descriptions of Anapanasati, this is just watching the breathing with piti sukha, with delight and joy coming from the mind. What is happening is the body is just almost disappearing. I'm talking about the five senses, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and physical touch. The only part of physical touch you have left is just this breath. And even that has been mostly experienced through the mind. It's a citta sankhara. It comes from the mind, this delight. And as you continue there, the delight is so strong. And the breath just, it's not there anymore. Instead you have this beautiful world, what we call the nimittas. These visions in the mind, lights in the mind. And sometimes those nimittas can shock people. Well, I've lost my breath. I'm not breathing anymore. That must mean I'm dead. You don't die in meditation. You die because you're not meditating, probably. But anyway, in those meditations, it is so delightful. And very often, the delight is perceived by the mind as a vision. In other words, similar to what you see with your eyes. But when you know those nimittas really, really, really well, you know that these aren't real visions. These are things which are created by the mind. Images, visions, which at first can be complicated. It doesn't matter what those visions are. Don't try and read anything into them. Except if they're beautiful and if they're simple. Those two things which we should be aware of and alert to. The more simple, the better. The more delightful, the more powerful, the better. So what happens is that we watch these things. And it's one of those attitudes which I was taught by Ajahn Chah, thinking it was just a skillful way of living in the world. It was also a skillful way of developing these nimittas. Whenever you see something which has got some faults in it, turn to the left, turn to the right, and see the beauty to the left and the right. I'm talking, of course, about those two bad bricks in the wall. To the left, to the right, above and below, are beautifully laid bricks. And so you learn. If you see some sort of a vision in the mind, number one, you don't take it as some holy vision that now you are a saint or anything. But you see the most simple parts, the most beautiful part. And I always go back to the same old stories because these were really important for me. That seeing a vision of fields and trees and hills and lots of green grass and streams in the valleys. I remember that nimitta so many years ago, and noticing it was complex, it was beautiful, but complex. And realizing that I needed to see something which was simple. Simple and pure and beautiful. And what took my attention was on one of the trees in this landscape, one of many trees, on one of the branches, one of many branches on that tree, on one of the leaves on that branch, out of many leaves, I saw one leaf which had a dewdrop on its tip. And that dewdrop could have been a raindrop, I'm not sure, but it was a drop of water. And that drop of water was sparkling in the sunshine. It was like the sparkle of a diamond. And my mind went straight towards that. It's called, like these days, zooming in. Not done by force, but almost being drawn in because of my training to look for the beautiful in nature. And as I zoomed in to that little sparkling piece of water, that sparkle took up my whole attention. It just went straight into my mind, and that's all that was there. Just a sparkle. A beautiful, beautiful nimitta. And of course, those powerful nimittas. First of all, you have to know that you got to that point by letting go, by being kind, by being gentle. That's how these things were arrived at. Now you're there, don't do anything else. If you can just stop all this controlling and taking notes and assessing and judging, stop all these things which move the mind and disturb it, of course it will just stay there for a long time. But if you try and assess or get scared or get excited or worry or want to take notes or want to tell someone about this afterwards, yeah, I've got a nice nimitta, of course that destroys it. Just in brief, I used to say that nimittas are shy. If you say their name, they run away. If you just be quiet, they'll stay with you for a long, long time, for many hours. And they're very, very pleasant, beautiful energy. And of course, that sometimes people who meditate a lot, they just want to, afterwards of course, you can remember these things. And they ask, well, you know, is the colour important? My nimitta is white, is that better than the blue nimittas, or the purple nimittas, or the green nimittas? And it's the colours aren't important. As long as they're simple and they're beautiful. And by beautiful, the standard description of a nimitta is if it is a green, it's more green than you can see in the world. If it's white, it literally is, it appears to you, remember it. There's more white than you can ever see, you know, with your eyes, than you've ever seen before. Blues, deep, purest blue of blues. And these aren't exaggerations, they're not just words. This is just how one experiences these things. Delightful, gorgeous, beautiful. So if you see the most beautiful, you know, in the ordinary rough nimittas, then it become beautiful nimittas. There is another problem which some people have, is that their nimittas are moving around the field of vision, or spiraling, or orbiting, or something. And whenever you have those complex nimittas moving around too much, one should know that in meditation its stillness is such an important part. So if it's moving, why? And the simile which comes up was myself having problems, beautiful nimittas, but they were never still enough to take me deeper. Until one day I remember I was shaving, you know, the beard on my chin. And as I was shaving, I noticed that the image in the mirror was moving as well. And I realized it wasn't the mirror's fault. I could hold the mirror, but if the person looking into the mirror was moving, then so did the image. It's a simple insight, but that sort of was so powerful for me. So when I was watching my nimitta in deep meditation. I decided not to move. I didn't try and hold the image still. The one which was watching was still. When I stopped moving when I was watching, this was like my mind moving, my body was perfectly still. This is a metaphor which we use to describe these purely mental experiences. When my mind was still, then nimitta became still. And like anything else, just like that simile, you hold a magnifying glass out under the sun and focus it on a piece of paper, and it burns. It captures the power, and the power doesn't move for a while, and it gets even more power. So when it didn't move, that nimitta got brighter and brighter and brighter. This is, again, just how it felt. It wasn't just a visual object. My eyes were closed, probably in a dark room. This was purely the mind starting to empower itself. And of course, as these things happen, it's a lot of joy. But not the sort of the joy of which moves. A joy which is just like deep, deep, deep contentment. And that deep contentment is more powerful than the blisses you experienced in the world. Very, very beautiful, very still. So it could stay there for a long time, but it got stronger and stronger. And there was two problems which I experienced. They weren't really deserving of the word problem. But first of all, there always comes some fear, because these are powerful states of mind. And fear always comes down to, I can't control this. The sense of self again. Of course you can't control it, you're supposed to get out of the way. And the quicker you get out of the way, the better. Because these states are very beautiful and very, very safe. And so you just let it happen, get more and more strong, and you disappear more and more and more. And the other, sometimes that fear came up as well, when it first came up, that these nimittas are so bright, so powerful. It's a stupid thing to say, but I thought, I'm going to go blind. You can't keep watching something which is so intense. My eyes were closed, it was in a darkened room, but still, I made that silly connection between watching the sun. It was brighter than the sun. These nimittas, way, way brighter. But the other strange thing which happened, I thought I would be the only one who experienced this, but other people have come and said they've experienced the same. You're watching this nimitta, so delightful, so blissful. And you thought, this was afterwards, how can anyone stand so much pleasure? This pleasure's too strong. You're afraid again of the pleasure power. And of course, it's never too strong. It doesn't know, it does you no harm. You don't get addicted to these things because they're born of letting go. They're born of renunciation, of you abandoning, not wanting things. It's the total opposite of addictions. So anyway, once one gets to those sorts of stages, those nimittas are so powerful. You can sit for a long time just with nimittas and, oh, you're having a wonderful time. And when you come out of that state of meditation, your five hindrances are just about gone for long periods of time. It's an upachara samadhi state, enabled concentration, people call it. I don't like the word concentration, but that's what people remember it as. Powerful, deep, beautiful states of mind. And afterwards, you're so happy, so alert, so clear. When you come out of those meditations, you have great opportunities to get deep insights into the nature of things, but the best insight is of what was happening, why did that state exist? What was happening to you? The five senses were not there. Sometimes it's the case that people ring the bell, they bow, they leave, there's a powerful sound or whatever, but you can't hear it, you can't feel anything. Because those five senses have disappeared for a little while. They're turned off. You're with the mind. Delightful, beautiful, exquisite. So you know you're not afraid. You know there's a whole world beyond these five senses. So this five sense place, you know, it's important, look after it, but it's not that important anymore. So I said last night, you're not the car in which you drive. There's something more, and you're feeling this. And if you just stay in those nimittas long enough, of course you go to the next stage. You don't decide, you just fall in. You go inside, deeper inside. And it's not ever done by will, you decide to do this. It's decided when the stillness gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And the peace just lasts, and something vanishes. You go into these jhana states. Beautiful, beautiful, deeper states of peacefulness. And this is the nature of the deep meditations. And I teach that because some of you do that. And that inspires me as well. So well done. So anyway, now we're going to do some meditation instead of just talking about it. So if you'd like to get yourselves in your meditation posture, so I'm going to do just adjust my body. Got to do that now. Later on, the body will just look after itself. And I get my body into what I think is a good posture. And then I close my eyes. And when I take off that sense of seeing, eyes are closed. So I've only got four senses now, hearing, smelling, tasting and touch. Smelling and tasting, it's easy to stop those. So I've only got hearing and physical sensations to be concerned about. And of course, that sixth sense of mind lurking in the background, waiting for me. So I check my legs. Legs, how are you? Well, as you do this, you know what I say to you, I practice myself. I get this relationship with these parts of my body. So I just ask them, and they reply. Yeah, they're pretty good. But I keep looking. I don't take the comfort which I feel now for granted. I make sure that, especially my toes, are not just too squashed. There's not too much pressure on my hips or my knees. And they said, yeah, it's good. So take as much time as you need to be with your legs and be kind to them. That's the biggest trick. It's not so much where you move them to, although that is important. It's this attitude, look, I really care for you, legs. I'm not exploiting you, taking you for granted. This is not a game. These are my legs. I want to make sure you're all okay. And it's something which they feel that they're important. And they do relax more. And I go to my butt. Making sure the pressure, which is mostly on my left buttock, not so much on my right. Don't know why, but it feels okay, it feels comfortable. So I move up to my back. Sometimes I had a bad back pain many years ago, and I was bent over for months until I managed to get it straightened up, just with some exercises, that's all. Get my back to be really nicely stretched. So the stretch takes some force and willpower, but I stretch it and then let go. I like the letting go bit. And I feel my back. There's a little bit of tightness in the lower back towards the left, but it's hardly anything at all. That'll disappear soon. Just wish it well, give it kindness. Feel everything in my body. and this time just my back. And go up to my shoulders. I can feel the shoulder blades, or rather the muscles on either side of the spine, called my shoulders. I've got to know them really well over many years of meditation. And I can see with the tight or with the loose, they're pretty loose. But I loosen them a bit more. It's the same way as you can open your fist or close your fist. The same way you learn how just to release any tension in your muscles. You start off with awareness, then trial and error, maybe using some sort of similes or metaphors, visions. I like the one of these muscles being stretched by invisible demons. It's only imagination, but it works. Being stretched apart. And I tell those little demons, I'll let go. So what was once stretched, they let go of both ends. And it becomes relaxed. Loose. No tension, no pulling on anything. Nothing being pulled in my shoulders. And I can feel the different sensation there. Now it's at ease. It tells me that now I can move down my arms. I've never had too much problem with elbows. If you have a problem there, just stay there and just relax the elbow. Just maybe just move it until you get a better position. To your wrists. Feel those wrists. And give them the gift of relaxation, of peace. Then your hands. Now I'm aware just of my hands. I realize for once my hands aren't in a good position. They're all just interlocked and I'm going to change it. Ooh, that feels good. It's like my hands were just waiting for me. To give it permission to change into a more comfortable posture. Just focus on my body part by part. You don't have to do it the same way I do. You can spend more time one area, add other areas. But then once my hands are comfortable, I move up to my neck again, above my shoulders. Always, I don't know, always just move my head around at this time, just getting it sort of, the shoulder just nice, and the neck just nice. The head is balanced. I feel the neck, I feel the tightness in the neck. That's a tightness which will always be there because it's got a head on top. But it's comfortable. Go inside to the throat, because I do suffer from hay fever type allergies. I'm going to make sure that throat is as comfy as possible. Just giving it attention. Makes it calm down. Because I give it kindness as well as attention. A wonderful, kindfulness. To my own throat. My throat wants a little bit more kindfulness. So I'm going to give it to my throat. And then I move up to my face, relaxing all the muscles in my face, especially ones around the eyes and the mouth. And the forehead too, for those people who have tension across the forehead above the eyes. Can you feel that? How do you make it relax? When you're feeling that, the mindfulness is there, the awareness is there. And you try this, you try that, until, yeah. That loosened the muscle. Oh, trial and error is how we learn. Same way how a child learns how to walk, pick up things. have the hand and the mind coordination. And you soon learn how to relax all the muscles around your eyes. So feel loose around the mouth as well. You feel tight areas and you loosen them. Really letting everything be at peace. And then when you've relaxed your face and you look at your whole body, all at one now. Feel my body relaxed very deeply. I don't move yet onto the mind. I stay with my body, relaxed, at peace. And here it comes. I can feel the delight now. The delightful feeling when the body is more at ease than usual. It's like laying on a bed or a recliner. Maybe having had a massage. Internal tensions vanished. The delight of relaxation, of peace, physical peace, of bodily contentment. The body just sitting here. No tightness, no tension. Not prepared to run a marathon. No goals. Just being here. At ease. When it's the right time, I focus on the insight, the mind, the emotional world, with the peaceometer. How peaceful am I right now? Or how agitated, disturbed, the opposite of peace? The more peaceful I am, the less disturbed I can be by the sounds of anything. You're really deeply at peace. Sounds don't disturb you at all. Anyway, how peaceful are you? A number from 1 to 10. 1, really peaceful. 10, agitated. Just so you know. Know what makes the reading go down. What makes your mind peaceful? It's usually two things at first. Silence. Not commenting on your experience. Not taking notes. Not giving names or descriptions. But being silently aware of this moment. Sometimes I call this listening to nature rather than giving a commentary about what you're experiencing. Shh. Just experience. And secondly, being in this moment, all the memories of the past, true or false, accurate or inaccurate, doesn't matter, we let them all go. What's going to happen in the future? Your future is being made now. This is the only time you have. So you learn to trust being in this moment. You deserve the peace. So let go of the future and the past for now. In this moment, in the silence inside, the reading on the piezometer goes down. And the feeling of peace becomes more tangible. Tangible in the sense that it becomes easier to be aware of. And once again, it's delightful. The delightful present, the delightful silence. When you're aware that silence is delightful, the present moment is delightful, it's really easy to stay there. Amen. You start to become aware of your breathing. Natural, you don't decide to breathe. You always are breathing. Now the mind just picks it up and notices it. If you need to, you can always breathe in peace, breathe out, let go. But a lot of times that those even words are just disturbing. You just notice the breath. In this moment, silently. It's like you've been working really hard and that's the only thing you've got left. Just watching your breath. Oh, what joy to have nothing to do. Just being with the breath in this moment. As the mind settles down deeper and deeper, you begin to become more aware of what a breath is. It's no two in-breaths, no two in-breaths are ever the same. All the millions of breaths you've breathed, this one is unique, as is this one. You regard your breathing as your friend. No need to control. No need to talk. Just be with this breath, which will take you into such peaceful, joyful, healthy states of mind. No criticizing, no judging, no assessing. You can do that later if you wish, but not now. And just being with your breath. And just noticing the delight. Soon it becomes delightful breath. It comes from breath, the delightful breath, a really delightful breath. Just a delight. That is where the nimittas begin. Don't force them. Don't expect. be in this moment where there's no wanting, there's no sense of attaining, just letting things be, letting go, just being still. It's time for me to be quiet. When I start speaking again, we'll be close to the end of the meditation. getting close to the end of the meditation. How do you feel? How peaceful is your mind? How joyful? How content? It's beautiful contentment, peace. With joy. And how does your body feel? How relaxed. I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times. When the gong finishes sounding for the 3rd time, please open your eyes at the end of the 3rd ringing of the gong. Thank you. Very good. Oh wow, nice questions here. So now we have questions. Oh, now first of all, from the USA, first question. I mistook emotional numbness following trauma for peace and gaining perspective. How can I acknowledge the pain without becoming overcome by it? I don't know when that trauma was for you, but sometimes that there was that method which I never expected to be used when I gave this simile of the opening the door of your heart, no matter what anybody has ever done to you, no matter who they are, let them come in, let them go out also. That was used by that group over here in Perth, Australian Society of Survivors of Torture and Trauma. And it was beautiful how they adapted that little saying. When a person felt safe in their own time, they just sat down somewhere and they imagined in the heart area a little, like Valentine's Day heart. And that's something simple to imagine. And they imagined it had 2 doors. And they opened those doors. And there was part of them, the part they were felt comfortable with, was inside their heart. They looked out, outside of themselves, on the concrete, in thin, unloved, rejected. But those parts of themselves which had been traumatized, even tortured, were outside. And that was a big problem. And they also imagined a ladder coming down from their heart to the ground. And they invited those little people to come in. The door of my heart is open to you. You're who I am. You're me. Come in. And these little parts of you She's been so badly treated. Unfairly, don't know why, but they're part of you. And they start walking up the ladder. When they come up to the top steps, you embrace them and cry. They're part of you. You open the door of your heart to them. And then you don't forget what happened, but the pain goes. There's something which the Buddha said, I mentioned I think last night, the emotional pain is the worst. That's more than 90% of it. The physical pain, you can't do much about it. It happens in life, even though that can be gross. It's emotional pain. But that we can overcome by letting it be. By opening the door of your heart to what happened. Anyway, it's powerful. I've seen people do that and they've had more pain and suffering than I've ever had. By far, and just, whoa. Amazing beings to see them do that and just what happens afterwards. Anyway, from Melbourne. If a nimitta comes, would you recommend it making it the focus of meditation or continue without changing focus? If a nimitta comes, it just takes over. It's not up to you to change focus or to let go of things. If it's a time the nimitta is there, it's just, it comes, it's there, it's in this moment. So all this idea of like doing something and controlling and should I drive to the left or drive to the right? Should I carry on straight? Should I put on the brakes or should I accelerate? I use that metaphor because most people have cars or motorbikes or something or bicycles. No, you just don't do anything. You're the passenger. Nimitta comes. Do nothing. Just be. Enjoy. Don't be afraid. Sometimes an nimitta comes and then it goes again. It's not the time. The preparation wasn't enough or you interfered with it somewhere. Usually it's you interfere with things. Just be still. I was going to mention the Ajahn Chah simile of nimittas and that was the still forest pool simile. But I thought, no, I didn't really have enough time before the meditation started. But the still forest pool simile is just he would meditate in the evenings by a pool in the jungles alone, a long way from anywhere. About 20 meters, 10 meters away from the edge of the jungle pool, the jungle lake. And then he would sit there sometimes in the evening at twilight, with his eyes open, especially if there was a light from, say, a full moon. He would sit there with the eyes open and just watch. And then the animals would come out with their families to play, whether it was bears or tigers or deer. But these were very scared animals because if they knew that a human being was there, they'd be scared, even though they may be thirsty, they would just go and hide in the jungles. Because more animals have been killed by human beings than human beings by, say, tigers or elephants. So we were the dangerous ones. But sometimes Ajahn Chah, he told me, he would sit there perfectly still, not move. These little animals would come out, the mouse deer, or the cats, and they would look around. Their eyesight was not good, especially at night time, but they would smell, and their ears would be very sensitive. And as long as he didn't move, then they'd think he wasn't there. And they'd come and play by the still forest pool. He said it was so delightful. This was, you know, monks that didn't have TVs, obviously. And this was like Nature Channel, only real. And then sometimes he said he was so quiet that once the ordinary animals had come out, then the really beautiful ones, the very rare ones came out, the shy animals. And if he moved at all,
they would run away. Those are nimittas and jhanas. They only come out when you're sitting really still, you don't move. So if a nimitta comes, then don't even note it. Don't make any decision, don't move. Otherwise it will know that you're watching and it will run away. That's a wonderful metaphor from the great Ajahn Chah. From New Zealand, does Chittanupassana help in observing and understanding thought processes? This is the third of the Satipatthanas. Real Chittanupassana is understanding, if you look at it through the suttas and even the commentaries, they all agree that this is actually done to be able to see the causes, what gives rise to the defilements of the mind, and what gives rise to the freeing of those defilements and to the entering of states like jhana. And if you look at that, what I did at the very beginning in this meditation, if you look at your peaceometer, what makes your mind more peaceful? What agitates your mind? That is a very good ideal of Chittanupassana, the third Satipatthana. You understand what disturbs this thing you call the mind and what calms it down. Present moment awareness, silence. And if you really are in the moment, if you really are silent, you can't give orders, you can't want anything or not want things. It's already here. You're in the moment and you don't give things names, you don't judge, you don't measure. That all needs the lack of silence. So you're just here watching this moment, perfectly peaceful, not moving, no future, no past, not wanting. And of course there, your jitta, your mind becomes very, very still. Very joyful, very free. Sometimes that's what they call even the jhanas, the liberations of the mind. Liberating from all this past and future, liberating from all this thinking and planning and doing, being free. A liberated mind, citta vimokkha, sometimes citta vimutta. Anyway, from Malaysia, are tinglings in my feet, soles and palms related to my body during meditation, related to tingling through my whole body from inspiration and joy encountering Dharma truths? That's a nice question. If you are tingling in your soles and palms related to my body during meditation, if that really happens, sometimes it's like your body is vanishing, it's disappearing. But just before the bodily totally vanishes, as you go into the, sort of the breath meditations, before it totally vanishes, it's like your awareness is strong, so those sensations you feel in your body are like amplified. So it rarely happens to me these days, but I remember the time when you were meditating and it was so peaceful, so still, and the body was about to vanish and go into this beautiful realms of the mind, and the whole body was like, it was like ants were crawling all over it. It wasn't unpleasant, not at all. It was very pleasant, but the whole skin was like alive, and it was an amplified feeling which is there all the time, but which we don't notice because the mindfulness was so strong. Very pleasant. So if it's very pleasant when you have the tingling in your feet, soles and palms, it's wonderful, enjoy. And it will vanish soon, as the body vanishes. And the tingling from inspiration, again, similar in the sense that through inspiration, your mindfulness is also much stronger than usual. You're boosting your awareness just with this mental joy. Oh, this is amazing, just what you've seen. And sometimes that tingling can be from seeing sort of a beautiful act of kindness, compassion from somebody. But even better than that is just listening to some Dharma which really sort of hits the spot for you in your situation in this time. And that does give you this beautiful tingling feeling in your body, maybe the whole of the body. But then the best thing to do with that type of inspiration is just, if you possibly can, find a quiet place, sit down and meditate. Because you've got pretty strong mindfulness and it's much easier to do the meditation from there. We can say the inspiration and joy from encountering Dharma truths, yeah. If you encounter some Dharma truths, just when you're inspired, sit down. And you can meditate for many hours easily. You start way ahead. And sometimes that time when Ajahn Chah just gave a talk in the last year when I was in Thailand, a beautiful talk, and I was so inspired. And he went for his sauna, I went a quiet place around the back of the hall to meditate. A couple of hours of bliss, which is not a bad thing to do. But then afterwards going to see Ajahn Chah and get that wonderful teaching. And that, why? There's nothing. That you can hear and read about that in other places. But just I do always recall that when you got really inspired by a great talk, what you saw yourself in your understanding of the Dhamma, then you cross your legs for me and you're crossing my legs and meditate, then it's just wow. Meditation is so easy with that type of energy. From India, how much meditation per day is good for a layperson? It's how much breathing is good for a layperson. How much breathing should you do in one day? So, for you, I do as much breathing as you possibly can. In other words, as much meditation as you possibly can. As long as it's peaceful and kind and joyful. However, if you find that you're meditating to try and get something and attain something or get rid of things, if it's done for some gain, you'll find that just makes you more tense. For me, meditation is relaxation, peace, being at ease, being joyful, being blissed out, being free. It's why you're meditating. It's more important than the question of how much time. From Switzerland, I appreciate if you can provide tips or advice to avoid my legs falling asleep during meditation, or do you wait until it passes? I teach from experience. And you may recall that at the beginning of this session, I said that when I was aware of my butt, I said, oh, most of the weight is on my left buttock rather than the right one. I should have realized there was a mistake happening there. It wasn't balanced. And so during the middle of the meditation, my right leg was no feelings in it. Well, and actually it was like numb on the outside but painful on the inside, so I moved it. So it's my mistake there that I should have checked my sitting posture with a little bit more attention at the very beginning when I was introducing the meditation. But if you are reasonably comfortable, it's not painful, then just leave it alone. Because when I started meditating, I had the experience my legs would always fall asleep when I sat cross-legged. It wasn't painful, like, you know, what happened this afternoon. But anyway, you know, this afternoon I just moved and just closed my eyes and then just got back into a nice meditation. But, and if it does really hurt, or sorry, if it does fall asleep, but it's not really painful, this is what happened to me. I would sit there and I have to move every time, not because of any pain, just simply because I thought that, wow, you know, if my legs are asleep, that's going to cut off all the blood to my legs. And I would get up after only sitting half an hour, I would get up with gangrene or something. It was just fear. And so I do recall just sitting meditation. I was still a lay person at the time. Legs falling asleep. So, okay, you can fall asleep if you want. I'm not going to move. It was uncomfortable, but not sort of painful. And then just after a few minutes, the numbness disappeared. All by itself. It kind of shocked me that the body looks after itself. So you can actually try. If your legs fall asleep during your meditation and it's not really painful, just leave them alone. And probably the feelings in the legs will come back again all by themselves. If it's really painful, very unpleasant, then just move. If you have a long meditation, then and it's early on in the meditation, your legs fall asleep, then please move. Because then it gets rid of a little bit of discomfort quickly, and then afterwards you have some nice meditation. From the USA, the Bay Area, could you please provide advice on how to deal with negative self-talk coming up during meditation? It's best to, negative self-talk is not to have self-talk at all, positive and negative. Because all of that talk is just the body just judging, measuring. It depends upon your life and what's happened to you the day. Now, if you just had a very difficult time, difficult day, you may be sick, you may be having some disappointments in your life, then when you actually do make a comment, it's always seeing the negative side of it, the bad side of it. It was the two bad bricks in the wall similarly, that why is it that people are obsessed with the two bad bricks, like I did? Why am I sort of almost attached to negativity, like I was? And this, after a while, it makes no sense. You look at this world, oh yeah, there's COVID, oh, there's environmental problems, but it's still a beautiful world. There's some amazingly kind people, by far the majority. So why do people always focus and put on the news the people who are angry and violent and say nasty things? Why can't we see that the other bricks in the wall? Why do we always keep focusing on the negativity? Why is self, what does it say here? Why is negative self-talk more attractive than positive self-talk? So that's one of the things we look at. And like I said to someone last night, somewhere anyway, that if you want to solve that problem, just get that piece of paper out. And just, before you meditate, and put your name on the top of the piece of paper, vertical line down the middle, on the left side of the piece of paper, all the bad self-image, all your criticisms of yourself, all the bad things you've done, all the stupid things you do, on the left-hand side. On the right-hand side, all your beautiful qualities. And just, I think it was last night I said this, all the beautiful, good qualities you have. And then afterwards, you cut it down the middle. The left half of the piece of paper with all your bad qualities, that goes in the trash can. And the right-hand side, that gets photocopied. That gets put on as your screensaver on your mobile phone. That gets laminated and put in your meditation room. So that before you meditate, you see that. Well, that's actually me. I've got another side of me, yeah, but this is the nice part of me. And this is what I need to get some good meditation. To see the good part of yourself, the kind part of yourself, the pure part of yourself. That's there too. When you focus on that and develop that, you get inspired. I'm from Germany. After my lung operation, I cannot meditate anymore like I used to. I can calm the body, but no more. Can you please provide some insight why that may be and how can I get back to peace? It is because we do become great creatures of habit. And we look at what worked for us before, and we can only see the superficial part of what worked for us before. Now, the inside part, the real part which actually works, is you had a lung operation, okay, fine. You can't meditate anymore like I used to. I don't know how you used to. But for anyone with any physical difficulties or problems at all, that Empress Three Questions is just a beautiful meditation method. Now is the only time you have. So forget about how you used to meditate before, or how you want to meditate in the future. This is right now. And the experience you have right now, no matter what it is, it's the most important one in the world. You're peaceful, you're agitated, it doesn't matter. It's happening now. Therefore, it's important. So giving this moment importance, whatever the experience is, right now, that's mindfulness. And the last ingredients in the Emperor's Three Questions is to care, to be kind to this moment. And then it becomes the kindfulness. Caring for this moment, being kind to it. And you find then, whatever you're doing, you become peaceful. And maybe even you don't go through even breath meditation if there's some trouble with the breath because of the lung operation. Sometimes you're just in this moment, being silent, and you become peaceful. And you forget about your body and your breath. And the peace becomes so joyful, you skip the breath and go straight to nimittas. And then you're flying inside, having a wonderful time. So, the object which you watch in meditation is not as important as how you watch it. Not the object, but how you watch these things. Do you watch them making peace, being kind, and being gentle? Or do you watch these things wanting something, and being disappointed because it's not as deep as you used to get, or just being impatient and wanting it to happen very quickly? Please always make peace, be kind, be gentle, which is one of my definitions of the second factor of the Eightfold Path. Make peace, be kind, be gentle with your meditation. You find whatever you're aware of is meditation. Okay, and that's the end. Thank you. It's not really the end, because I'll be back next week. But until then, have wonderful, peaceful meditations, no matter where you are in the world. And again, as I did yesterday, I just like this, just to give a blessing. Sabba roga vinimutto, sabba santa po vajito. Sabba vera mati gando nibuto chatu wang bawa sabitio viva chantu sabba rogo vina satu mate bawan wantarayo suki digayu go pawa apiwa dan hasilit sanichang wuta pachalino chataro dhamma watanti ayuano sukang balang. Thank you for joining. See you next week.